got to pay for all the manufacturing of the products and the R&D and all that sort of stuff, which is a lot more. So, what was that?
Raw material
and all these kinds of things go into this $40, and that should say manufacturer's cost. A manufacturer can reduce this cost. You know, obviously that's a good thing for the manufacturer, because then they've got more gross margin that they can work with to offset items where their costs might be higher, or they make a mistake and they do something wrong. And generally, a manufacturer's margins are also around 5%. I did have Carboy's number at one time, and I think it was a little higher than that, like 7% or something like that. And I don't know. Does anybody know what Seco's margin is there, or net profit? Somewhere in that neighborhood. You know, there's been a lot of talk about Exxon Mobil and, you know, all these billions and so on and so forth. Their net profit is around 7% of sales. Certainly not a high number. High numbers would be 14% margin, a gross. If you took their sales, whatever their sales are, 5% of that is kind of like an acceptable level, but not a great level. A great level would be more like 14 or something like that. And Exxon Mobil's 7. Now, what Exxon Mobil is doing, I would guess, I mean, their executives know they don't want to show a huge net profit because, you know, what could happen? Who knows? So I'm sure they're, you know, fixing up their offices, buying everybody new computers or whatever they do. But, I mean, it's, you know, it's hard to hide. If they had a gross margin, if they had a net profit of 25%, it would be hard to spend all that money on, you know, legitimate expenses. And investments are different. Investments are depreciated. So if you make a $20 billion investment, you can't take $20 billion off your sales. You can only take a percentage of it off because it's a depreciated part. So just a little thing, and I think I have this thing actually written down. If you look at the fourth bullet here on page 89, if the distributor can sell the product for $101, so that means instead of this thing being $100, he just gets another buck for it. His net profit will go up a dollar. So instead of being $5, it would be $6, which is a 20% improvement. So distributors, if you guys are working with distributors, and I've worked with distributors that don't even really understand this, and don't, you know, they don't get it totally. So, you know, on your products, if you're having a promotion with a distributor and you could say to them, look, here's what it's going to cost you, you know, try to find out more about what their profit margins are. Not to tell anybody what it is, but so that you understand what it is and see how your products and your promotions can help the distributor make more profit, because that's the key. So if he sells that thing at 101, then there's $6 in here instead of 5, and that's a 20% increase in his profits. Similarly, if he sells it for 99, then it goes down to $4 instead of $5. And that's a big reduction. Okay, let's take a look at inventory. Just some interesting information. This is something that I always found to be extremely interesting. If you look at the page 89 about inventory cost, if the end user owns the inventory, the end user owns it at $100 because that's what the thing sold for. So the end user has got $100 tied up in the inventory. If a distributor owns the inventory, the distributor has it at $80. If the manufacturer owns the inventory, he has it at $50. And I've always thought there was an opportunity there to reduce a user's cost by moving where the stock was. And I know down in Texas, Briggs & Weaver was a big distributor that worked down there with Cooper Industries. And what they did was they went in and bought Cooper Industries' entire inventory. Their crib had a huge amount of inventory in it. And, you know, a lot of it was obsolete, as most of those inventories are. And so they gave them, as I recall, like 10 cents on a dollar. Briggs went into Cooper, and Cooper said, look, here's a list of my inventory, you know, and then of course they went in and audited to make sure all these items were there. And then the customer said that they felt their inventory was worth $10 million, so Briggs gave him $1 million. And then Briggs sold it back to him. Immediately, the cost of carrying that inventory went from $10 million, that was what the customer was paying, down to $1 million, which is what Briggs gave him for it. And then, of course, Briggs started converting it all over to stuff that they sold and sold it back to them, you know, on some prearranged price. But, you know, this whole idea of owning inventory and how does it stay and so on and so forth, it seemed to me, and I was never responsible for this, but it seemed to me like there was an opportunity there if somebody really understood this in inventories and carrying costs, and you know, they got to pay taxes on inventory and all that kind of stuff. It seemed to me that you could provide a customer a lower cost just by manipulating ownership of the inventory and that sort of thing. Now, on the other hand, if you have inventory and you own inventory, it costs you a lot more than just the money that you have shelled out for the inventory. So, and we'll talk about that as we go on here.